What's going on, everybody? Welcome to our downtown studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I'm John Ramdean. He is Robin Black. And there is a new sheriff in town. And I know some people are watching this on Wednesday or Thursday. And they're like, this is like old news. Yeah, but we haven't had a chance to explore that Stipe Miocic is the new UFC heavyweight champion. Robin, the master of the breakdown, laid it out perfectly. It was that explosiveness, that athleticism of Stipe Miocic that allows him to change direction very, very quickly and throw that big power into that right hand that went right into the jaw of Fabricio Werdum. And then he fell in a heap on the canvas to the surprise, I think, of 45,000 disappointed Brazilian fans.
Yeah, it was super cool. It was super duper cool. The breakdown, Fabricio Werdum, there was hot lava. Hashtag hot lava. Yeah. People were like hashtagging that to me, which is fun. Had Fabricio Werdum submitted him, everybody would have bombarded me with hot lava.
Yeah.
The other thing I pointed out in the breakdown was the athletic direction change, and that is athleticism. It's skill, but it's also his athletic platform. That was less sexy of the two results, but way cooler to me. Like, that's literally the thing that makes him unique. All these fighters are good at everything, and then you're looking for one edge somewhere, something that you can do that they can't, or you can do better than them. And for this guy, it's the athletic ability to change direction really fast. That's super cool. Also, you know where I am right now?
You are in Toronto. You right now are in Mexico.
I'm in Mexico
People are watching this, you're in Mexico.
Mexico right now.
And I think you're training with our buddy Mark Stables.
I'm planning to train with black belt Mark Stables. Yes, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu down there. He's a great genius. I'll be doing that on Friday.
Very, very exciting stuff. And when we're talking about what made Stipe Miocic successful, and I brought this up to you before, when you look at the champions right now in the UFC, Stipe now the heavyweight champion, John Jones the light heavyweight champion, Rockhold the middleweight champion, Robbie Lawler the welterweight champion, RDA the former teammate or the teammate of the former heavyweight champion Fabricio Werdum, RDA, that's lightweight, Conor McGregor the featherweight champion, Dominic Cruz, 135, Demetrius Johnson, 125, and Joanna's 115. Yeah. But I think what we have to look at, and of course, Miesha Tate there in there as well, I guess, which you can kind of include in this list, all have that same style, not to the same degree as Stipe Miocic, but Demetrius Johnson kind of, and Dominic Cruz, very similar in the sense that they're able to retreat and then change directions very, very quickly and land power. How many people, because if I think about if John Jones could do this, if John Jones could have direction change like that based on his athleticism, I know he's unstoppable, but I think he'd be unstoppable at the heavyweight limit.
I think so, too. We said 6 months ago, the guy to beat John Jones would be Stipe Miocic. Yeah. If I could take one guy and say, I think we can use this guy, that would be the guy we'd try to have beat Jones, which still super tough because Jones is brilliant. It's interesting. It's like there is still, for some bizarre reason, there's still a debate that skill development is more important than athletic development. But Stipe Miocic is the heavyweight champion, and Demetrius Johnson is the smallest weight champion. The thing they have in common is super athleticism. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how the people who make this argument, what they're using to make it.
I think part of the argument, because you and I are having the conversation, because we know Firas Sahabi's philosophy, an incredible martial artist and mentor and coach, somebody that is truly looking for the truths of combat, that he has to pass this knowledge onto his athletes that are getting inside the octagon, fighting at the highest level. So he is there in search of truth. And, for example, they don't think that that's valuable, the strength and conditioning element. It's, not that it's not important.
It's tricky because we can't put words into his mouth.
Yeah, I know.
Or Greg Jackson's. And these people are geniuses. We
of
are in no way undermining their thinking. But
we're asking questions.
Yeah, some of them do that. They say, we need to take the time that you have and spend almost all of it on skill development. Mm-hmm. We don't want to take that time and spend it over to some type of explosive training or athletic training. Now, that I'm putting words in their mouth a little because that's not exactly what
Sure, it's paraphrasing, yeah. but it's still yeah. the same philosophy mm-hmm. that if you were to ask them, they feel that it's more valuable to spend time developing your martial arts abilities yeah. opposed to
your athletic attributes.
Because there's certain yeah. aspects of the athletic thing that you can learn to in your martial yes. arts training.
Yes.
And the question is, if you I'm going to use his brother as an example,
yeah.
incredible martial artist, and subscribes to that same theory. Now, how much of an athlete can you become if you dedicate your time to strength and conditioning? Whatever the time is, 20%, 30%, 50%. I'm not sure what that number is. It's probably different for each individual.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is there a point where it's like, I keep trying this stuff, and I am getting stronger, and I'm getting faster, but it's not helping my in-ring performance.
Well, the answer to how much strength, speed, athleticism can you develop, the answer to that question is more. You can develop more. You can always develop more. Mm. We have a growth mindset.
Do you get to a point where it's like, okay, my gains are 0.5% over the last year. However, the previous years, yeah, I got a whole bunch of gains.
Yeah.
Now I'm slowing down. This isn't advantageous to me. I'm jumping ship.
You know, I just answered a question to myself as you were saying that. I said, what argument can people who say do way less athletic training, what argument can they use when you see Stipe and you see this
yeah.
man became the heavyweight champion because of his athletic platform? And the answer to what argument can they use is, they can use Damian Maia.
Hmm.
They can say Damian
yeah,
Maia.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God,
yeah.
is Damian Maia's skill level is so high, he can beat every single fighter in the world. Any man that walks the world, Damian Maia can beat that man. And that's the example.
People think you're nuts.
But I'm not.
I know.
Damian Maia can literally choke any living being out.
Rory be like, nah, he didn't choke me out.
Yeah, so... That is your example, and it's a really good one.
It is a good example.
It's a really good one, and it's just a philosophy. So the reason it's hard is because we can't say these people say this because they will come back and go, actually, I mean do some of this.
Yeah, of course.
But the reason it's complicated is if we take Damian Maia and we say we want to make him stronger and faster,
mm-hmm.
the act of training him that way, and let's say we're using a little bit of Olympic lifting in a certain way.
Sure.
If we do that, tomorrow, when he should be recovering, his body requires recovery to make the adaptations from that lift, he is now doing jiu-jitsu or wrestling. When he's wrestling, he's having a worse quality of wrestling, so he's learning worse, and he's getting worse quality out of the lifting because he's not recovering when he should be. So that makes it super complicated. So the answer isn't don't do all of these things. The answer is, it's incredibly complicated to do all of these things, and therefore, let's maybe not do it. Let's just concentrate on your skill development. And I think that's the real thing that some of these coaches and fighters and people who have this belief of less athletic development, they're not saying it wouldn't be valuable. They're saying applying it can get in the way of some of the other
mm-hmm.
things, and you'll get worse training from your lifts, and you'll get worse training from your wrestling because we didn't recover. So it becomes complicated. As a result, Demetrius Johnson, who Matt Hume has added that game, the development, the athletic development, to his recipe of Demetrius mm-hmm. Johnson. And because he's the whole picture, he applies that athletic development. And Demetrius rests way more than most fighters. He trains less
mm-hmm.
than a lot of them. And it's because Matt knows when to work him, when to rest him, and when to apply the resting from this training is done during this with sort of active rest, which would be yoga, light rolls,
mm-hmm,
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We know when to do that. And so he structured his training the whole picture. But Eamon, who is an example, Damian Maia is an example, these guys are not wrong. It's
right.
just a different way.
But I think
I don't think one is better than
yeah.
the other. They're just different choices.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what it comes down to, because like Stipe Miocic, for example, he doesn't come from a big team. If you look at most of the champions, you talked about Demetrius Johnson. He's with a certified mm-hmm. genius in mm-hmm. Matt Hughes.
Yeah.
John Jones has the luxury of training in Albuquerque, in New Mexico, with all the talented individuals that come through the doors of Greg Jackson's and Mike Winklejohn's, Luke Rockhold, an American kickboxer. Boxing Academy. The list goes. Stipe That's his team. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, we actually don't need training partners. We don't need big-name training partners. Mm-hmm. We're doing us. And I know a lot of people are like, well, we'll see when you get in there with top guys.
Yeah. Da, 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 da.
So yeah. I think it's all individual.
Yeah, it is. If one isn't better. You must choose a philosophy at some point. And if that philosophy is, I got 22 hours, I'm spending it all on skill development because I'm going to be Damian Maia. Or I'm going to spend some of it because I'm going to be Steve Edmonds.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and see if philosophies can overlap on this edition of Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you chatting about UFC 198 that happened in front of 45,000 screaming Brazilian fans in Curitiba, Brazil, the birthplace of the Shooter Box Academy. Of course, Stipe Miocic, only one of two non-Brazilians to get a victory in enemy territory. And again, when you become the heavyweight champion, that's supposed to be the biggest prize in all of sports.
Uh-huh.
In my opinion, especially over professional boxing, as much as we love the sweet science, the best fighter in the world is the guy who's in the UFC. That's the way it works.
That guy was yelling, I'm the world champ.
I'm the world champ, yeah.
And He's the world champ.
He is the world champ. And we're just talking about, before the break, about conflicting philosophies and how some coaches believe it should be all about skill development and trying to develop your martial arts abilities. Some coaches say you need that in addition to your strength and conditioning. That's key in order to get to find success in rounds 4 and 5. Can there be multiple philosophies?
Well, I think there are, and I think some of them will do it all. And that I think some of the guys who learned it is more about skill. And they're not wrong. Damian Maia, look at him.
Mm-hmm.
This guy doesn't arm curl.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
I mean.
But Rory does.
But Rory does.
And Rory beat him.
That's right. What would be, man, I don't know. What if we take Damian Maia now and we say we're going to do everything we can to, because when Damian Maia practices jiu-jitsu, the growth has to have slowed down over time.
Right.
Although that's not necessarily true, because as long as you still have unlimited curiosity, you can keep learning.
Mm-hmm.
But what if we have him and he's a better athlete? Mm. You know what I mean?
Age would have to be a factor as well, because we're comparing Damian Maia now at 38 years of age to Rory McDonald, who's 26 years of age. When they fought, it was 2 years ago. And so, something like that. So you had a Rory McDonald in his physical prime taking on an aging Damian Maia who, you know, spent the majority, the bulk of his career at 185 pounds, now getting comfortable at 170 pounds. What happens if it was a Damian Maia? If Damian Maia, the Damian Maia we know in 2016, was a 25-year-old Damian Maia, could he?
We might build him different. Yeah. They're all individual. And the game is to try to make your racehorse faster and run better and win. What do these guys do? They fight. What are they looking to do? They're looking to win fights, not get
hurt.
Not get hurt. And
because that was the point, like we were talking about. I think Pollock brought up that Damian Maia has received 15 or 16 significant strikes in his previous three fights. And if you remember back to the Pat Cummins fight, which was the fourth fight, it went 5 rounds. Maybe. Ryan LaFleur. Ryan LaFleur.
Yeah.
They kind of look the
same.
They like the
same guy.
Same guy. So if you look at that 5-round fight with LaFleur, Damian Maia controlled the majority, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's however many punches. So let's say 20. So let's say he took 35 significant fights in his last four bouts against Gunnar Nelson, Matt Brown, and Ryan LaFleur. How was that even possible?
Yeah. You know, I think I'm talking myself into
being a bigger Damian Maia fan.
Yeah, but also into, hey man, I mean, I love to watch athletic development. it is a part of developing the person. We don't have our Bruce Lee books here,
no.
But some of his, Bruce Lee believed yeah. heavily in making the body yeah. stronger and able to do things more. He's heavily believed, and I think that's cool. But man, Damien Maia is such a good argument. Like, what if we just take our fighter and we just say, we're not going to concentrate on making you bigger, faster, stronger. We're going, skill beats all that. Because mm-hmm. Damien Maia doesn't get hit, and he beats everything.
And
he's and has he done some conditioning? Yeah.
Yeah.
So some. Yeah. You ask him. There's shots of him doing kettlebells or whatever. Sure. So there's some. I think some is the answer.
Some.
But then Stipe Miocic is the argument. Yeah, Stipe won that fight because you know what Verdum is? Verdum's a skill guy.
Yeah.
Verdum's a super skill guy. But, and the athlete beat him that
night. And I do think Verdum as well is a strength and conditioning, but it's more so it's like, okay, we spend this small portion of time building up our body and our cardiovascular conditioning. Because remember, he went to Mexico City for a long time in preparation. So he was clearly trying to work on it. But based on what we know of Fabrizio Verdum, you can't be the best jiu-jitsu guy in the world if you're not developing skill.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
You can't knock out a former K-1 champion with strikes if you don't have the skills.
It's true. It's true. It's such an interesting argument. But in the end, what's the best plan? Is we make you a better martial artist and we
Robbie
make you
Lawler.
A better athlete. I mean, that's the best plan. There's no... The way that this conversation happens, because we have a limited amount of time we can use with you, and it's probably 22 hours a week, but they need to be sparse with certain amounts of sleep, diet, all these other, like recovery, ice baths, all of these things have to go together. If we then take you out of the gym where me, your skill developer, and I put you out there, I don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they have you doing huge jumps and throwing things and you're tired now, I can't train you. I'll just get you not to do that. I'm going to get you to not do that. Well, you'll work on it with me. So it is really – we're talking about this a lot because it's really interesting to us. I don't know if this is interesting to other people.
It's got
to
be interesting to the fans, because you think about that this sport of mixed martial arts is less than 20 years old. UFC 1 happened in 1993. The sport of mixed martial arts wasn't around. We believe that that's the beginning of mixed martial arts, but it was still styles. It wasn't, you know, again, the sport we see it as today changed even in 2005. It was different than the way it looked right now, the way that people train, the different skills and abilities that people acquire. So I think people are trying to figure out what is the best. What is where can we give the athletes the best strength and conditioning and the best skill development? The coaches,
strategies,
all of that things, stuff. Because it seems that not everybody is on the same page. Because if you look at a fighter's week and you talk about these blocks, what is happening in those blocks? What specific skills are they acquiring? Because everything has to be regimented in order. Yep. And then if you say, okay, well, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, boxing, Muay Thai, this, that, where's the other intangible? It's like, okay, we can pull this in from Kung Fu because people aren't using it. Now that we've got the shell, we can start adding all these different things.
Yeah, and I think that's what the best minds do. I think there's other things at play. So Greg Jackson and Firas are two of the very best and the very smartest. They also run a business. And their business has to take into account 30 fighters. Mm-hmm. So we have to build a structure around the ability to make all of them good. And so that changes. In my opinion, Demetrius Johnson is the example. If we're going to say, we want to find the very, very best and reverse engineer them, see what that guy's doing, that's the guy we have to look at. And I think he is the best fighter in the world. And I think Matt Hume has the whole picture. But next month we may say that about Rory, because Rory is among that too. So it's a fascinating thing.
Super exciting time for mixed martial arts. We're going to take a quick time out. There's a whole slew of stuff we got to talk about. UFC 199 coming down the pipe, as well as this fight night card featuring the bantamweights, and of course we got to talk about Vitor and Jacare. Don't go anywhere. More of Five Rounds Today when we come back. Yeah. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you, chatting about UFC 198. The attendance-wise, the third largest show in UFC history.
Toronto's still number one?
I think Toronto's number one. Or is it Australia?
No, there are two.
The two big ones in this show. Things are good for the UFC, man. Oh, man. Don't have Conor on the card. Don't have Ronda Rousey on the card. You can still put nearly 50,000 people in a venue. However, the heavyweight championship, Jacare, Vitor, Shogun, Damian Maia, John Lineker, Cyborg, Little Nogueira, some of the biggest names in Brazilian mixed martial arts history. Vitor Belfort and Jacare in the co-featured bout of the evening. Jacare, outstanding game plan. Smart. You know why? Because Vitor has been in the consciousness of Brazilian mixed martial arts forever. Whether you admired the guy or you hated the guy, if you were 185 pounds and you were climbing the ranks, you knew one day you'd be meeting Vitor Belfort. And Jacare, just a competitor, just a guy that understands what he wants, and his goal is to become the UFC champion. And he says, I will not neglect any aspect of this game. I'm going to execute the game plan. Very few people can execute the way that Jacare can execute. Beautiful attacks from the outside. Got in close on the hips of Vitor Belfort. Made Vitor work. Yeah. You saw his energy slowly diminish. And then once the fight went down to the ground, he just let Vitor struggle there. And then he unleashed his ground strikes.
What would you rather have? Would you rather
neither?
That's right. That's the right answer. That is the right answer. You rather have Vitor coming at you and throwing punches,
no.
Or would you rather have Jacare pinning you into a spot and then raining down punches?
I think Jacare, because he seems like
he might take your neck.
That's exactly what I do. I just put my hands right down and put my neck out there. Man. Whereas Vitor would just obliterate you.
You know. I love Brazil when I think about it.
Yeah.
Like, we love Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so thanks for that.
Yeah. And Brazilian Muay Thai.
Yeah. And Brazilian waxing.
Brazilian barbecue.
So many good things, right? But think about, they're a country in turmoil.
Yeah.
The people are in turmoil. There's corruption in their government. People feel helpless. And these people, when they're having that, they look to martial arts for their enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Super cool.
Like, yeah. Like, when under an oppressive government and your life is stressful, the martial arts makes them happy.
Very cool.
That is really, really cool. And it is what it is. Like, I really want people to see fighting as this beautiful thing. It's like the ultimate human art
form. I'm with you.
It's the ultimate human art form. And not every person who watches, they don't have to watch it the way we watch it, mm-hmm. but they could. They could see it as beauty. And Brazilians do.
I mean, Jacare's style is one of those styles because you know what Jacare wants to do. It's like, okay, yeah, he's improved his stand-up game.
I'm scared thinking about him like, oh, man.
And even though, it's just like Matt Brown. Yeah. You know what Matt Brown did for the last 10 weeks? Learned and trained his ass off to stop Damian Maia's takedowns and to prevent the choke from happening. You know what happened? He couldn't prevent the takedowns and he couldn't prevent the choke. Vitor and Jacare.
I know. Right? Like, you know, that's just such an incredible level of skill. It's just such an
the details,
amazing,
right?
Yeah.
Is that what it comes down to? Does it come down to the details of, that Damian Maia and Jacare have been in there with very talented individuals in the past, and that it comes down to they see openings that if you're not to their level, they exploit them.
And they just have little understandings. Like, if I'm speaking Gaelic to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is. Oh, I have no idea what I'm saying.
No clue.
Right? And that's what's happening. Damian Maia is speaking a language that they don't understand.
Portuguese.
They're like, I thought I knew this language. I can count to 10 in Portuguese. Why is this? I thought I knew it. I don't understand anything he's saying. It's just so detailed. Like, it's just on such a different level. Little things. If your hand is caught in a certain place and you push down on the wrist, it forces you to go a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing.
It's one thing, yeah.
Well, he's got 7,000 details of that. So it's just, you just can't understand him. Matt Brown did an incredible job. I think it was 831 seconds. That's how long he was, I think. There's 60 seconds in a minute, and 5 minutes is 300. Yeah, 831 seconds. That guy stopped Damian Maia from choking him. Eventually, Damian Maia is going to choke you. But it's very impressive to be able to be that long. And often, it depends, I guess, how interested you are in it. But you can look at that fight, and on Monday morning, say, Damian Maia completely dominated Matt Brown. Okay? Yeah, that's sort of true. You look at the first 30 seconds of round three, there's a moment there. Matt Brown has won the fight.
Yeah,
this fight is won. Matt Brown's the winner. I can't believe
it. If he executes certain things, Matt Brown would win that fight.
Absolutely.
Based on a tired Damian Maia.
That one shot, his head rings off the ground, and then he comes in again.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it going in. It's in Matt Brown. He looks back. If Matt Brown, I think it's maybe 4 minutes and 30 seconds. So 30 seconds into round three. Go back and watch it. See the moment Damian Maia's head hits the ground. If Matt Brown steps back and goes like this, Matt Brown probably, there's a very good chance he wins that fight. But he just can't help himself. It's there. I'm going to go get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's who he is. That's how he's won all the fights that he's won. But this brilliant Damian Maia has developed a game where that's wrong. Mm-hmm. That thing that makes you good at your thing?
Yeah.
That's wrong if you do that against me. That's so brilliant.
I want to go back to 185 pounds. When you saw the performance of Vitor, you looked good.
You did. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Jacare was just better prepared, less miles, whatever it is that allowed Jacare to succeed. What would you like to see in the future for Vitor Belfort?
I don't know.
If he wants to compete, if he's like,
I think he does still, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, if he landed one huge punch in that fight, everyone's saying he's fighting for the for the middleweight title. I think he still wants to fight. I don't know, man. There's so many little things at play, but among them is the different landscape with USADA now. We are going to test these athletes, and they cannot take anything on this list. All these things. Well, some of them took some of that stuff before. It was outlawed, but if you could figure a way around it, you would do it. And then in his case, even took some because it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can take these things. If you get this piece of paper signed by a doctor, and you hand that to – you can then take this and inject it in here. Okay, cool. I'll do that. No, you can't do that
anymore. Yeah.
Now, it's not just that he will obviously not perform physically the same way as he did when he was allowed to get a doctor to sign a thing and inject something into him. It's that his body is now worse than before he took it.
So which is amazing, the performance we saw from him, considering that, and it's by Jacare.
For sure. And I don't just mean the look of his body, which has changed a number of times. I mean the physiology, the hormones and all of the physiology of his body is different. So it's hard for him now. And
he's still throwing flying knees.
You think of it in terms of how of the extra challenges that exist for some of these guys now, you really are impressed by them. Like, it's like, and in his case, I've been hard on Vitor before. It's just you get passionate
about things,
you get all excited. But he was allowed to take things that he can't take anymore. The fact that he can perform now and pass these drug tests says a lot about who he is, how driven he is, and how badly he wants to fight. So that's interesting. This takes us to Cyborg as well, who I am a fan of. But she's scary.
Yeah.
She's going to kill somebody. You know, she's
going to. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk. We'll finish up our talk about UFC 198 with Cyborg and then look ahead to this outstanding fight night card in Las Vegas on the 29th. Cody Garbrandt and Thomas Almeida in the main event when Five Rounds Today continues. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Before the break, we were just finishing up our chat about UFC 198. Stipe Miocic becomes the heavyweight champion of the world, stopping Fabrizio Verdum in round one. Jacare gets the job done by stopping Vitor Belfort with ground strikes also in round one. Damian Maia molests Matt Brown and gets the submission late in round three. We also saw the debut of one Chris Cyborg Justino, who was facing the very tough Caesar Gracie fight team representative Leslie Smith. And Leslie Smith says the fight was stopped a little early, despite the fact that both of her eyes were swollen. Cyborg, what'd you think?
I'm a fan. I'm a fan of how she fights. She seems really like a really likable person too. So you want her to
she
do
is
well.
A likable person.
Yeah, I haven't met her, but we have friends in common, yeah. And people love her. They think she's really sweet, and she seems really sweet. I think you can be a fan of her,
but you failed a drug test.
Yeah, and I mean that doesn't always bother me either. I don't know why. In certain cases,
in certain
it bothers
ones,
me. Yeah.
Right.
There's a bias somewhere in
sure,
me. I don't
right.
know why. Because Josh Barnett, I think, is awesome. That dude's failed like three drug tests. So clearly, this is something in the way that I'm viewing these doesn't seem reasonable. But I think you can be a fan of her and still ask lots of questions. I mean, she's a big muscular chick. Mm-hmm. And man, can she fight. There's a part of the conversation that always happens is about her weight. When Connor, who is 170 pounds, fights at featherweight, people say he fights midgets and teens of them, make fun of them, and like, because, you know, stars are, some people love them and some people hate them. And then she's 170 pounds and she wants to fight might fight at bantamweight.
Mm-hmm.
And both her and her George Lockhart, who, in my opinion, is the very best in the world. I don't even think there's a debate. I mean, some people will point to Dolce.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take 50 people who have worked with either guy, all 50 who worked with Lockhart will just say this
rave
is
about
amazing.
Him, yeah.
And you'll take 50 that worked with Dolce, and some of those will say he's amazing and some will not.
Yeah.
So just that is... you know, in as far as who they've worked with and how they respond to them. But
we're saying this from personal, first-hand conversations
we've had
with fighters, 100%.
Exactly. And, but some people also love Dolce, and he has done a great job too. Lockhart's like, well, I need to get her here. So many of us are like, the conversation starts, she's like, I can't make 135 pounds. That's not possible. Now, first, to just address that's not possible,
mm-hmm.
It's easy.
Sure.
You literally just need to be a 160-pound person permanently.
So, but her opinion is it's not possible because I do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I want to be. I want to be a muscular person.
Yeah.
These are all things that I need for me to perform the way that I
that's,
can.
That's my point is if you say it's impossible, I can't get to this weight, that's a lie. That's not true.
Right.
We can get anybody to 160 pounds permanently. Then the follow-up, George will be like, I've seen people say all she has to do is run and diet. Well, I need her. She's not going to have performance. See, but we never said that. We never said it's easy and it'll keep you hitting like a lightweight. She hits like a lightweight man. We'll keep you hitting like a lightweight. We'll keep you going back into the cage at 168 pounds. Your performance will be at the same, only you'll be 135. We said we can get you to 135.
Yeah, so, right. You bring those things up. If I'm Cyborg, it's like, okay, then I'm not interested.
Great. Then she doesn't have to do it. It's an interesting conversation.
But everybody bombards her.
And you're right, including me and thousands of people having this conversation.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
We're all looking at it. It's like, but of course she could do that if she loses 10 pounds of muscle over 6 months through diet and exercise, make her a 160-pound person and cut from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else is like, no, we want to see her at 100. None of this has anything to do with her.
Yeah.
This is a whole bunch of nerds out there, including us, out there, and we're tinkering. Oh, we could tinker with this, with this cool racehorse.
Yeah.
What if and she's like, you know what I hope she does? Whatever the f*** she wants to do. I hope she goes and does whatever is best for her. This conversation is not, we could make this racehorse accomplish this if we do X, Y, and Z. Cool, we could.
Mm-hmm.
But this racehorse will do whatever it wants to do. As well, she should. She's a human being who could go out and pursue the life that she wants. But like I said, if the conversation is, I can't make that weight, you can make that weight.
But in the context,
change the conversation
and
say, oh, but we can't make that weight and still have a high-performing cyborg like this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody said that.
But it's
nobody
like,
said that.
But isn't that really the whole conversation? Because I'm getting down to this, what everybody's saying they want me to, for this reason. I have to get in there and fight. You're asking me to change a whole bunch of things. Meanwhile, I've been making $100,000 a fight, not fighting in the UFC.
She should do whatever she wants to do. Our conversation, our nerding out over this human being is... The conversation was, I can't get there. And the answer is, you can get there. Diet and exercise, we take 10 pounds off people all day long. Any strength and conditioning slash nutrition team can do that in a month.
Right.
Now, You said you couldn't get there. Now we said you can. Now right. you're going to change the conversation.
But did
say,
she? But was
yes,
she?
She did.
Was
she
that
said,
really?
I cannot do it. It's not possible. I won't be able to have children, etc.
Okay, right.
So,
right.
And we're like, that's not true. Now, if you want to change the conversation where we were like, I can't do it. Yes, you can. Oh, I can't do it. And this, that's a different conversation.
Yeah. And that is the conversation.
Because
yeah.
We, I know full well, with full knowledge, that to make this person weigh in for. We need her to be 135 pounds for a championship for the 25 seconds she's on the scale.
Yeah.
If we're going to do a trick of biology to make this person that, well, yeah, I know that's not, we can't do that. But that's not what that person said. Mm-hmm. That person said, I can't do it. I won't have babies. It'll damn. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. We dropped 10 pounds of muscle off people. The Rock lost 80 pounds to do walking tall. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we can do it. Easily.
But, yeah,
but what we're doing is permanently changing your body to make you a 160-pound version of that. We can achieve that easily.
Right.
But you don't want that.
Right. Of course not, because
that.
This is what brought me to the show.
Conversation.
Yeah, and that's
yes.
And I think that's, again, I haven't directly spoken to her in terms of the actual language of the conversation, but the conversation, everybody's asking her 135 pounds, can you get to 135 pounds based on the fight? You know, and
yes.
I mean, that's the conversation
now. And the
answer
now. Is we'll have to make you a smaller person walking around.
That's not working for me.
Yeah.
That is
don't
not.
Do
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And that's why she's like, I think the only reason she was compared to Ronda Rousey is because that was the money division. Now that she's been introduced to the audience, I think that the UFC and the masses would say, I really don't care. Just like when Ronda Rousey was, did anybody know who Liz Carmouche was? Or Sarah McMahon or any of them? They just wanted to see this judo girl throw somebody through the air and armbar. Just like now, it's like, I don't care who's standing across from this scary looking Brazilian. I just want to see her run across the cage and smash somebody in the face Muay Thai wise and have her arm raised in victory.
I love watching her.
Right.
You know what Nate Diaz would say to her?
Yeah.
Well, are you fighting midgets?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
That's
true.
Why are you calling out 135 pound fighters?
Those were the big, because.
But then that brings us right back here.
Yeah.
That's where the money is. So for you to
because
do that.
Because she wasn't there. She wasn't that. Yeah. She wasn't a part of the conversation because the UFC didn't allow her to come into the UFC. That's like, now I don't need you girls. I'm in a class of one.
You're fighting midgets.
Exactly. That's true. But she's not going to care because I think the UFC is going to realize that it's like, wow, we actually do have a star on her hand.
Yeah.
So we just keep building this girl this way. Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm and Michelle fight at 135 pounds in a very good division where this division
is the cyborg division.
It's the cyborg division, just like it kind of is at 205 pounds
or
125 pounds, Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah. And again, this conversation kind of has nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
It's about her.
Yeah.
But she can do whatever she wants to do. Nerds like us and thousands of other people all over the internet have this conversation because she's a fascinating athlete. And so we all wish we could make, you know, marionette them. People want to put certain fights together and do certain things. And, you know, so it's a nerd conversation.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are looking ahead to UFC Fight Night Garbrandt Almeida, which goes down at the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. May 29th. Mark it on your calendar. It's coming up very short. It's a Sunday night. Going down in Sin City in Las Vegas, Nevada. UFC fight. Now, listen to this friggin' card. The main event, Thomas Almeida, undefeated, 20-0. Cody Garbrandt, Team Alpha Male's little stud, 8-0. Henan Burrell, the former champion, Jeremy Stephens, Tarek Saffiedine, Rick Story, Jorge Masvidal, Lorenz Larkin, Josh Berkman, Paul Felder, Aljamain Sterling, Brian Caraway, Sarah McMahon, Jessica Ai, Eric Koch, Shane Campbell. Holy smokes. Thomas Almeida, Cody Garbrandt, the future of 135 pounds. Both guys, 24 years of age. As we pointed out, neither one of them has tasted defeat. What do you expect?
these guys don't know how to lose, right? That's cool. It's really cool. So I'm in Mexico right now.
Yep.
And which is awesome.
Awesome.
And I'm going to watch this in a bar in Mexico.
Yeah.
And I want to see, like, because there is an audience in Mexico.
They're, yeah, of course. The fight fans.
Growing everywhere.
Yeah, of course.
And the Mexican people love fighting. Just like we were talking about Brazil and how when Brazil is in turmoil, they look to martial arts. And so this is going to be cool. Oh, man. This is an interesting one. They don't know how to lose. Like, and neither one thinks it's possible yet.
But is, when you compare the styles, is this more similar to Stipe Miocic and Fabrizio Verdum, where Cody Garbrandt is the boxer-wrestler who really... Mm-hmm. For the most part, uses his hands, and Thomas Almeida, it's kind of reversed. Like, we know he's got a good ground game, but his Muay Thai is what brought him to the show. 16 knockouts, and crazy risk-taking knockouts.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's going to wake up looking at the lights one day.
Hmm.
He will. Is it Sunday? Is it this week?
You're right.
I don't know. Could be. He is going to. The way he fights, he's going to lose by knockout. When he loses, oh man, this is a really cool fight. Like, Sean Shelby literally was probably like, because he loves Almeida.
Yeah, of course.
He loves Almeida. He's told me specifically, and I don't remember his exact words, so I'm paraphrasing, but something along the lines of the joy of his job is guys like this.
Of course.
Who love this and are so happy to be in here doing this thing that they love. Garbrandt is really good. He moves his head really well. He's going to try to make this guy miss and hit him coming forward, and he can do it.
So how much will that change Almeida's game plan? Let's not even bother with the head. We know he's going to slip it. Let's attack the body. Let's affect his legs. Let's smash up his legs first so he can't do those things.
You know, you go and you watch... Go watch a few hundred Muay Thai fights, and there's a certain way that they go about business. We're going to take our time. I'm going to smash up your legs.
Yep. No rush.
The concept of beat someone up, you know where it came from?
Yeah. Yeah.
Middle, beat them up, go up. And that would be a good – he's got a nice sort of – he's got a tradition of Muay Thai, so he might do that. That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. Garbrandt moves his feet really well. Mm-hmm. All the best. We were talking about it on five rounds this week or last week. I mean, I'm in Mexico right now.
No.
I don't know which week it was. But we were talking about that all the top guys have this ability to move now. You know, and it's something 5 months back, a year back, it was rare.
Developing,
Dominic Cruz was rare. Now Dominic Cruz is still rare. That guy, there's one of him in the whole world. But other guys, people have looked and been like, hey, wait a second. How come that guy's doing something and beating everybody, and none of us are doing it? We gotta do that too. This guy, Dwayne, he's been on that level for a long time. He's been thinking that way for a long, long time. But I don't know if he worked with Garbrandt. I know Garbrandt kind of has a dislike for TJ now, so I don't know. There's all kinds of drama there. But I don't know how much Dwayne worked with Garbrandt.
We know TJ Dillashaw is actually in Montreal training right now. Mm-hmm. We look to the 135-pound division because also on this card, the former 135-pound champion, Hannah Barrow, will be in action going up to 145
Sterling.
Pounds. But Aljamain Sterling and Mr. Misha Tate, Brian Caraway, have a chance to...
Why do people hate Brian Caraway? Because they're jealous.
Of course
Misha's
they're jealous.
So incredibly
of
beautiful.
Of course.
Like, look at how beautiful that woman is. And she kicks people's asses. Like, you know what I mean? I love my wife, but like, for sure. You know what I mean? Like, so...
No, I don't know.
So that's...
She's never going to hear this because she's going to be in Mexico.
Yeah, that's right. Also, Brian Caraway, like, you can't hate a guy just because he has a beautiful girlfriend.
People hate you and me because we have a TV show, so they're haters for whatever reason.
Brian Caraway is a really... good, great fighter.
He is.
And I think people will often underestimate him. And I don't know. Will Aljamain?
Because you talked about Thomas Almeida and Cody Garbrandt. They don't know how to lose. Aljamain Sterling doesn't know how to lose either.
Man, and Ray Longo, what a good dude that guy is.
Oh, yeah, super good dude.
So nice. Yeah. It's so many nice things to say about us and what we're doing up there.
And I mean,
really
you look at, on top of that, you look at lineage and you look at roots and you look at the desire to grow as a team and that... Sarah Longo team with their affiliations to Mark Henry and to Henzo Gracie. They're really doing something good there. You look at Aljamain Sterling, his boy Ally Quinta. Yeah. These guys are all helping each other get better. We're told we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to wrap things up in this edition of Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Final segment here. Going to wrap things up. As I said, the fight night card. We just figured out you're not going to be in Mexico while this fight card's happening. Ah. We'll be back. So we'll get to enjoy it together.
Yeah, that's right.
So 135 pounds. What do, when you look at Cody Garbrandt, Thomas Almeida, and Aljamain Sterling, and all these incredible athletes at 135 pounds, you throw in TJ Dillashaw into the mix, and Dominic Cruz, who will be taking on your favorite UFC 199. Of course, Aljamain Sterling getting ready as Chris Weidman is getting ready to, he hopes to reclaim his 185-pound championship. A good time for 135 pounds. Will this elevate Dominic Cruz's game, considering all these young, hungry prospects are chomping at the bit to get a hold of the aging dominator?
So remember when you talked to Chris Weidman 4 months out from Anderson Silva?
Yeah.
And they were like, we've been preparing for Anderson Silva his whole life?
Yeah.
Aljamain Sterling has been preparing for Dominic Cruz his whole life. Mm-hmm. All these next guys have been planning to fight him, hoping one day, and they have a plan. But man, I don't know. I don't see anybody beating Dominic Cruz. And I mean,
Demetrius.
Demetrius Johnson?
Yeah.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. But he's fair. He's lost him once,
sure.
Although he could he
think
can
about
get
how
to
much
him.
He's
maybe.
Done.
Yeah, maybe. He has to overcome size, too. It is well documented what a Uriah Faber nut hugger I am.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah.
But how does Uriah beat him? How does he beat
grit.
Him? Grit. I mean, will over skill?
Yeah.
You know, maybe. Man, Dominic's so good.
He is so good.
So, it's confusing to try to break him down even. And I mean, BJJ Scout, I don't know if
mm-hmm,
you've seen.
Of course,
he or she or it, whatever they are.
The entity that is.
Has done some incredibly good breakdowns on Dominic Cruz. And I, of course, watched those as well as been breaking him down myself. And I still don't think we really understand what he's doing. And that goes for BJJ Scout, whose breakdown was brilliant. And Jack Slack, who has done brilliant work on Dominic, and myself. We really don't know what he's doing. We think we know what he's doing, but we actually don't. And that excites me.
It is exciting because, again, he subscribes to Bruce Lee's theories, and the guys at Alliance are molding him. And in addition, he's a wrestler, and he's an athlete, and now he's an analyst. You're really getting the perfect storm of a UFC champion that is really seeing the bigger picture. Well, that seems to be it for us. Next week, we are going to look ahead to UFC 199, where Dominic Cruz looks to retain his title when he takes on Uriah Faber for the third time. Then we also get the rematch for the UFC 185-pound championship. Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold, and perhaps the biggest reason to tune into UFC 199, it is the return of the prodigy BJ Penn as he takes on Cole Miller. On behalf of Robin Black, Chase Kaiser, our producer, I'm John Ramdean. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you guys next time on Five Rounds Today.